What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Finkware. Their best and latest dash cam, the U1000, is now available. It's able to capture clear and crisp videos of your drive. The U1000 is the very first two-channel dash cam in the world to boast a native 4K UHD front and 2K QHD rear resolution. In addition to its amazing video quality, the U1000 can also save you money with its speed and red light camera alerts, or make you a safer driver with lane departure and front collision warnings. With the convenient remote live view and parking impact alert cloud features, you can instantly check on your car or be notified of potential hit and runs. The U1000 and Thinkware's full range of dash cams are available online and in-store at Thinkware.com, Best Buy, and Amazon in both the U.S. and Canada. With coupon code SMOKE20, that's SMOKE20, SMOKE20, you will get 20% off any regular price Thinkware dash cam. That's SMOKE20 at Thinkware.com to redeem that coupon code at checkout. This offer is available in Canada and the U.S. only on their website. Protect yourself with a Thinkware dash cam. And guys, let's talk about watches. When you're buying a luxury watch, especially if you don't have a hookup at a Rolex store, which 99.99% of people don't have, you should be buying your watches secondhand. And when you think about secondhand watches, you want this to be a smooth, painless process. You don't want there to be fraud. You don't want there to be mechanical issues. That's where Crown & Caliber comes in. Crown & Caliber is the ultimate secondhand luxury watch store. They've got over 2,000 watches in stock at any given time from brands like Rolex, Omega, Panerai, Breitling, Bell & Ross, Tag, Cartier, and on and on. And if you want to maybe sell a watch, trade a watch, or buy a watch, they can do all of those things. In fact, they can take your watch on trade and give you credit towards a brand new Breitling from the Breitling store if you wanted to do that. They have a special relationship. I just did a three-way trade where I got rid of a gold Submariner and a white Explorer 2 and got a brand new AP Royal Oak from Crown & Caliber. That's how I'm consolidating upwards right now. And what I want you to do is go to crownandcaliber.com, find the watch you like, and then use code TST175. That's code TST175 at checkout, and I got $175 for you if you buy a watch from Crown & Caliber. TST175 is that code, folks. Lastly, it's my place. Westside Collector Car Storage is now taking deposits and reservations. We will be open very, very soon. We are LA's newest premier indoor collector car storage and concierge facility with 130 spaces indoors right in the heart of Playa Vista, just north of LAX Airport. We have on-site wash and detail bays. We have a free airport shuttle. We have battery tenders at every single one of our spaces. And we have Southern California's first indoor quad vehicle stacking system, which is both fire and earthquake resistant. It's for the new 2020 codes. Go to westsidecollectorcarstorage.com. It's all written out. Westside Collector Car Storage, or just Google it. We will pop up and see what you are missing when it comes to concierge service for your vehicles. You know what the best thing is? When you're like, oh, I need something done to my car, and you're like, I got a guy for that. I don't have to do anything. I just call the guy, and the guy handles it. That's what I'm going to be. We're going to be your guy for your cars. Westside Collector Car Storage, opening this spring in Los Angeles. Alrighty, folks. On this episode of the show, we've got a legend in the room. Mr. Bruce Meyer is here in studio. This guy, if you're in LA, he is a motorsports car collecting and real estate tycoon. His name is literally on the Peterson Museum. He's one of the founders of the Peterson Museum. Runs the Checkered Flag 200 Club at the Peterson Museum. He also is a major landholder in LA, and he's got one of the coolest car collections you could ever imagine. Mr. Bruce Meyer is on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Smoking Tire Podcast, and we are here with we got a legend in the studio. We got a legend who's so legendary, people write entire books only about his car collection. Hello, Bruce Meyer.
Hey.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Here. Absolutely.
Enjoy. Coming down to this side of town.
No, it's pretty cool, actually. You know, it's, you know, going along Jefferson, uh-huh. there were some empty buildings for sale. Is that where, like...
Thunder Alley?
Yeah, was that where Iskenderian and all those guys...
Iskenderian is right there. He's... So where we are...
Is he still there now?
The building is, and the name is on the building. I don't know what they're doing over there.
Because there's a lot of those buildings are for sale.
Yeah.
And I would think it'd be a pretty cool place to have a building.
Well, it's so funny that you mention it, because my building, Westside Collector Car Storage, is directly behind those buildings. It's a Sentinella address, not a Jefferson address, but that's where we are, in Thunder Alley here. So back in the day, right, Iskenderian. He made cams.
Very much.
Good
does.
Cams.
Oh, no, great.
Like, he was like the guy.
They call him the cam father.
Yeah.
No,
oh, really?
He's the cool deal. He is the guy.
And then you had Edelbrock down here.
Oh, I
as
know.
As well. And you had Shelby right up the road.
No, this was a happening place.
I might need to come by the Peterson because I'm looking for my new place over here. I want to find some period photographs of the factories on Thunder Alley of these companies. In the archives downstairs, they can find some of that?
Absolutely. We're digitizing old Peterson Publishing photographs.
Oh, awesome.
If you go into our vault, which is part of our tour, you'll see we've really put up all these amazing mural size photos.
Oh, in the vault itself?
Yeah, yeah. Right. So you should see it. I think it would be a great addition.
Let's just dive in there. Bruce is for those of you who don't live in Los Angeles, Bruce is a Los Angeles car collecting legend. I first heard of him at a Supercar Sunday event in probably 2010 when you just showed up in the 250 Testarossa, and I just went, holy shit, that's a guy just driving that here. And then people went, oh no, that's Bruce Meyer.
Oh.
And then I
still get, you know, bashful about that because I don't consider myself a collector. I run from that title. I think of myself as an enthusiast.
And well, you can be
there's
both.
A big difference. Well, you can, but, you know, I didn't go about putting together a car collection. I went about buying the cars that excited me that I wanted to drive. And so I would buy them one at a time starting in 1964. So what is that, 55 years ago. So, and I started with, I guess my first car in that period was a Gullwing, and I still have a Gullwing. But it was $4,000.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean,
and a new
I'm not laughing because it's elitist. I'm laughing because it's... The taste was there, right? You know, in 64, a Gullwing would have been just a used car at that time.
Yeah.
Was it that?
It's
if you
exactly
go back,
what it was. It was a used car at that time.
Yeah, the nostalgia wasn't built yet. At what point, when did that light switch happen where all of a sudden those just kind of old, used European sports cars where it went, hang on a minute.
I would say, you know, in the 60s. So my first car, that I was super proud of and that I dreamt about and kept the brochures was a Porsche.
Uh-huh.
And I bought a Porsche in 1960 from John von Neumann. It was a 1961 model. I had no options, no radio, just chrome wheels and red paint, which was
nice.
Was important.
The 356?
Yeah, 356. Yeah. And I paid $2,700 brand new.
Okay.
So I mean, and now the radio upgrade is $3,000.
Well, yeah, but what's the inflation, Zach? What's $2,700 in 2020 dollars? I bet that's around $40,000.
What do you want?
1961. $2,700 in 1961.
So Zach does all the math for us.
Well, no, the internet does, but he's the key to the
guys
internet.
That know how to work it.
I can do it, but I just like to, you know, use the internet and practice.
Yeah, just practicing. I think that's about $40,000 right now, right? Oh, it's an old site. It only goes 2018. It's how much?
22.9.
Wow, that's a cheap Porsche.
Yeah.
That's a cheap Porsche.
Well, it wasn't a lot of money at the time. I mean, they weren't, you know, luxury cars. They were sports cars, you know.
I guess the definition was different, right? It meant you got less.
Well, you know what? It was 60 horsepower.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was nothing.
Yeah, in 61, I guess the Corvette would have had 250 odd horsepower, probably, right?
In 61, yeah. You know, look at the Fuelly Corvette had 60 horsepower in 61. Oh, yeah.
I guess I know why we were laughing at them at the time, huh?
Yeah.
They're laughing now.
Yeah, it reminded me, I used to race motorcycles, and I remember I was racing a 500cc Matchless, which at the time was, you know, it was 400 pounds of junk, you know, but it was 4 inches of fork travel. Then along came these Japanese bikes, And I mean, we laughed at them. They were zing, zing, and it just didn't sound like a manly sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they kicked our ass. And all of a sudden, you start thinking, you know, maybe there is something to this.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like Lamar,
so,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, so
like,
so the Corvettes, you know, kind of learned about the Porsches.
They did.
The hard way.
Well, the Corvette is a great car because it always democratizes whatever the Europeans are doing well. You know, it makes that very affordable. Although I think it's doing it well still, but it really kept its front engine long past its prime,
yeah.
Didn't it? But you got the race car. Is it a C6 race car? Your yellow CompuAir car?
Yeah, so that was, you know, in later years, yeah, that's badass. Honestly,
have you driven that?
I have driven
it. Is it fantastic?
It's beyond. First of all, it sounds like a Top Fuel car.
Mm.
It is the most.
These are one of the best sounding race cars,
without
man.
Without a doubt.
That's an end of the world sound.
That is the end. It's Armageddon.
Yeah.
It is.
I got to hear those going down in Le Mans, and it was. Well, it was a unique sound there because everything else was like turbo or, you know, more efficient. And then those come through, especially on the straight and just thunder.
There's a real bass to
100%. You can tell a Corvette coming.
Yeah.
I mean, honest to God, those were thunder. It shook the road. That it's just a typical American overdo it, big V8,
yeah,
kick ass. And they did, by the way. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that car won Le Mans in 2009, but they started winning right after, you know, like in 2001 or 2.
Oh, yeah. C5s and C6s were like cleaning up. They were great race cars.
Yeah, they were great.
Okay, wait. Jeez, where do I want to even dive back in? Because there's just tangent city. Okay, so you bought a Gullwing for $4,000. 1964, and that was your first college.
There's a little more to the story than
okay,
that.
Okay.
So when I had this little Porsche through college, and when I graduated college, I took a bartending job up at Lake Tahoe, and there's a classic boat company there called Sierra Tahoe Boat Company, and the fellow that ran the boat company, Moreland Vicel, had this Gullwing, Rudge wheels, beautiful dark blue paint with a Corvette engine.
Whoa.
Which just, I mean, it just appealed.
How
to
interesting. Me. Was that an intentional thing, or did he break the Mercedes engine?
He broke the Mercedes engine, and they are, you know, very equipped for engine transplants, you know, being a mechanical company.
Yeah.
And they dropped in this 327 Corvette with two AFBs, you know, and it was
hilarious.
I saw the car, and it had a reverse trigger on this shift, and I thought,
like a Hurst?
Yeah, and being a bit of a hot rodder, you know, I thought, this is the best of both worlds. You get a foreign car with an American engine, like, what could be wrong with that,
yeah,
you know?
So that's how you end up at Bizzarini's.
That's right. So I had that car for a couple of years, and then I sold it to my fraternity brother.
Okay.
And he still has it today.
Oh, really?
Just as I sold it.
Still got the V8 in it.
With the Corvette V8.
And that's hilarious.
It is hilarious. And the car, I have a Gullwing. It outperforms my Gullwing every
Oh, my God. Have you done a back-to-back with it?
I wouldn't even embarrass myself. Seriously.
Does it have like a Corvette gearbox,
I
too?
I have a Corvette gearbox.
See, that's
it still
where
has
it gets
the
interesting.
Mercedes rear end. Still has the Rudge wheels.
Cool.
And, you know, when I did it, I turned in the 13s in the quarter. I mean, it was a serious kit.
Yeah. No, 13s in the 60s was very
I'm
fast.
I'm telling you,
that's
this
very
car,
fast.
This car, you know.
It's kind of awesome. I kind of like it.
It was faster than a Cobra, I can tell you that, a small block Cobra. And,
well,
and,
that
and it ran through
piss
like a
Carol
big
Shelby right off. I'll tell
yeah,
you that
oh,
much.
Yeah, Shelby didn't like that. It ran through like a 4-inch exhaust pipe or whatever they ran in the Gullwings. And it sounded,
oh, the big
it sounded like yeah, it sounded like a Gullwing. So if I approached you, you would say that's a cool Gullwing, and it sounded like a Gullwing, but it just.
How funny. Yeah, when you dump the whole V8 through the one collector in
that's
the single,
right.
It kind of masks that.
Totally.
That's very, very funny.
So that was my first, you know, venture into exotics,
yeah,
so to speak.
If your fraternity brother brought that car to Gooding at Pebble, what do you think would happen? Because it's a period swap. You think it would tank?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pebble, yeah.
I can almost say that for sure. But when I say tank, I mean, you know, like a Gullwing of that quality,
yeah,
with a Gullwing matching number engine would probably be, call it $1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
That would probably be, the person that bought that car would hope that there's a Gullwing engine they could put
right
in it. Because, and that's where I kind of learned. Every time I'd open the hood on that car, somebody go, ugh. You know, and I would go, I was so proud of it. I mean, it fit right in there. It was so, I had nothing to do with the installation, but right. I thought, how cool is this? And I'd show them the engine and they'd all want to throw up. You
know? How funny.
You know, that doesn't work. So then I sold that and I bought from Hal Wallace, who was a movie producer, I bought a 300 SL Roadster and I had that for a number of years. So, and that was stock.
So
and
what's your take on coupe versus Roadster in the 300 SL world?
That's a good question. I prefer the coupe.
Because of the doors. Because the that's doors. The thing.
And that is the thing.
Yeah.
That's what made them. They were the first supercar. Yeah. And they went way out on a limb. And you have to figure, that's 1955. When you look, what was in 1955? You had a 53 plastic Corvette with a, you know, flame six or whatever
speed.
It was.
Forget it.
Flamethrower six. I forget what they used to call
it. Blue flame?
Blue flame,
yeah.
Good. Blue flame six. You had a T-Bird. You know, with a Y block in it that couldn't get out of its own way. And then you had a Gullwing that was built just
or
German
60 horsepower Porsches.
Space frame.
Yeah.
I mean, it was perfect.
I've driven one once. It was absolutely lovely.
I've had a Gullwing since 1964.
The say after the engine swap one, have you just, how many have you been through?
I've been through three.
Okay.
So, what happened was I sold the Chevy powered Gullwing, bought a Roadster, silver Roadster with blue interior. I had that for probably a year or two, and then I sold it to a friend of mine that probably had it for another 10 years, and he just beat it. But that, by the way, that was my only car. It wasn't like that's my weekend
car. No, that was your car?
That was my car. Ah, and by the way,
I like
people used to drive Porsches and Cobras. That was their car.
Well, Jay Leno. Jay Leno famously, when he moved to L.A., his daily driver was a Countach. And he said it ran absolutely perfectly, and it makes total sense. I think there were fewer cars on the road at the time, but it was a thing that was normal.
If that's your car, if somebody gave you a Countach today and said that's your car, you'd be very fine with that. You know what I mean? If somebody said, "Well, I've got a Tesla and a Countach, you can drive the Tesla during the day and the Countach," you know, that works too.
Yeah.
But we drove those cars every day. That was my car.
Yeah. Actually, I think I remarked when driving it, like, I think I could daily this. Like, it was really easy, actually.
You could definitely daily it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people say, oh, they're so hot inside. If you're on a hot day in L.A. in the coupe, it's warm. But if you've got 5 miles an hour of forward momentum, the air circulates through there and it's not. I mean, it's, and by the way, those were different days. That's when
you could move.
That's
you
when
could
you when you were shopping and the store said air conditioned on the front. You know, that was a big deal.
That was an ad.
Store.
It was the whole reason for going to movies.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
So, you know, you just had a different mindset.
Yeah.
You know, before dishwashers and before washing machines and before air conditioning, people actually got along just fine.
Yeah. Expectations have changed.
Yeah, it did. You know, you just learned to live with the stuff.
Yeah,
What was the maintenance like with that car? You know, you dailied it around. Was it tip-top shape for a while? Did you have problems?
The original Roadster. Chevy one?
The Roadster.
Yeah. No, it's no problem. Those cars are Germanic. They're built like, you cannot kill those cars.
I've heard they won't die. They just will slowly decline over time if you don't. That's what Dieter said. You know Dieter from HG? He maintains those in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
HG Motorsports. Whatever. They've got a couple, and they maintain those.
You know what? Honestly, you can't kill them. And a friend of mine, Chip Connor, we've done the Tour Auto in one of those. And honestly, I thought there's going to be nothing left of this car. I mean, he was downshifting into first at like 50. And, I mean, just like it was so painful for me being such a wimp, you know. But that car today just runs perfect. You when you get them set up, you get the valves adjusted, you change the oil. You can't hurt them.
Do you find there's some other cars that are older that give you sort of the impression of being fragile, but where you actually kind of have to hammer the snot out of them?
Good question. Nothing really comes to mind. I mean, the Porsche's little 356s, again, those are so reliable.
You have no choice but to go full throttle everywhere.
Yeah, and you know, I remember I had a Volkswagen for a while. I mean, you'd get in it when it was cold, and you just floor it. Because you had to floor it just to keep up with traffic. And they just kept up, and you just...
Yeah.
They didn't... No, there were no problems. These were well-thought-out cars.
Yeah. So after you used a Gullwing as a daily driver, or a Roadster, what was the next interesting daily driver from there?
Then I just went back to Porsches.
Okay.
And even today, I love Porsches. I mean, at the end of the day, my wife has a Mercedes... C63S.
You know, those which are fun. Is, those yeah. are cool. Yeah. A little yeah. hot rod. Yeah. Those are great.
And she thinks she's about as good as cool as it gets on the road.
They've got, you know what those have? They have the best parking lot idle. The glub glub. They have really mastered the parking lot glub glub. I love it.
And that's why she loves it. Honestly, she goes to her ladies' luncheons or valets the car. And when that thing starts up, it's, we had a water ski boat, you know. And honestly, it reminds me of firing that thing up. It just makes great noise.
They accentuate it. The way the gear kind of engages when you're maneuvering a 3-point turn, it really adds a little extra bark in
there. It's a nice car.
They're cool.
Yeah, they're
super
really,
cool.
Yeah.
But okay, wait. But that's, you know, compared to what we've got in this book of yours. I mean, I'm just going to go through Cobra number 1.
So
tell me about because this doesn't just have a number 1 on this Cobra.
Wait, I have that car too.
Yeah, it's the same.
About to get it's real awkward, Bruce.
Yeah, he has a reproduction Cobra.
Yeah, not I, one.
I, who yeah. made yours?
ERA.
Great. You know, honestly, the continuation, we call them, continuation Cobras, are every bit as good as the original Cobra, really.
Yeah.
And in some ways better, and it depends what engine you have in it. I mean, you know, they don't overheat, and they go like hell.
Yeah.
So.
But yours is the first one. Because this book, it's like, there's like, you know, there's guys, you go in a warehouse, there's like crazy cars, right? You see there's crazy race cars and crazy historical, but every single car, it's like, oh, that's not a Ferrari Testarossa. Like, that's a Ferrari Testarossa like Phil Hill and Carroll Shelby drove. Like, that's not a Mercedes 300. Like, that, the first owner was Clark Gable. Like, that's a Bizzarini. Like, oh, it's the one that won the GT class at Le Mans 65. Like, oh. It's like every single one of these is like the ultimate one-up story.
Well, for me, it's all about the story.
Obviously.
You know, I mean, there's great cars out there. There's probably better Cobras. But that being the very first one, serial number 1, meant a lot to me.
So is it CSX 2001?
Correct.
Okay, so the 2000 was the blue press car that was Carroll Shelby's car.
Yes, it was.
Right.
And this was the first production car. And the very first Cobra ever to race in a race.
So
wow.
And it was sent to Europe. I bought it in France 20 years ago.
But in France?
Yeah, it was complete serendipity. Like they say, a blind squirrel will find an acorn every now and then.
Yeah.
That was me with that car.
Were you looking for a car?
Absolutely not looking for a car. I went to an event called Retromobile, which is in France, which is fun. It's in Paris.
Yeah. We've heard that that's like the one to go to.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I still go. I've gone every year for 30 years.
Wow. Cool.
And that car was sitting there. It was painted Aston Martin green.
That's kind
and
of cool,
it was
actually.
On this stand, this fellow Lucas Hooney, who's a big-time international car dealer. He had it on a display stand. And so I walked by it, Aston Martin green, and that car has some very distinct features unique to that car. They call fenders in Europe wings.
Mm.
So instead of like big, fat fenders, they call them wings, okay? So the wings on that car were unique to that car. And I looked at it thinking, well, that was somebody's idea of a custom. And I walked by it a couple of times, figure my curiosity just killed me. I said to Lucas, I said, tell me about that car, just because I was thinking, you know, like I want to hear some cockamamie story.
Yeah.
And he said, that's the very first Cobra. And I went, Lucas, please. You know, I mean, because the very first one were slab size, you know.
Yeah, the 260 cars, right?
Yeah, they like little Barquettas.
Yeah.
So he said, well, this is the very first one. And he said, come here. He sat me down in a chair. He comes out with this, like, a file
he
box.
Rolls out the cart.
Yeah, really. And he proceeded to go show me pictures of the car from day one to today.
Well, because in this book, I mean, we see multiple different variants of the bodywork. So is that because it was raced and modified along
exactly.
the way?
And by
there's
the
like,
way,
even what, like a bread vanny thing happening here in this photograph, which is real crazy.
That is.
Look at that.
Yeah,
isn't that wild?
Like a camback.
Put to this camera, maybe. Look at that. It's like it straight so, bread van.
So it's an interesting thing you bring up, because when you restore a car like this, you have to pick a point in time.
Right.
So
you got to drop the pin.
You got to drop the pin somewhere in that timeline from 1962 to 2000, right? And the car lived different lives. So in 1962, when the car was made, it was made by Ed Hugus, who was the Cobra distributor in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And the car had slab size. It looked just like any stock small block Cobra. That's the way it came out of the box.
Just like the blue one.
Just exactly like the blue
one. Okay.
And so it was sold to a fellow named Lucky Kasner, Lloyd Lucky Kasner. He was the Maserati distributor dude, and a friend of Carroll Shelby. So he decided that...
Zach, just Google CSX 2000. Yeah, sorry.
Right. He decided that that car should go to Le Mans.
Okay.
So off it went to Le Mans. Well, by the time it got there, Shelby had already started putting 289s in it.
Look how this
is
like a street car. This should go to Le Mans.
That's right. It should go to
it's like how that worked.
It was a performance car. So my car looked just like that car.
But imagine today just buying a Lotus Evora GT and going, you know what? Le Mans for you.
That's right.
That's just like crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. You put a cage in and off you go. By the way, back then, you know, had the Le Mans start, the running start, and it was pretty
Yeah.
Well, I guess the delta back then between a street car, you know, a performance street car and a full race car was not that big. You know, you didn't need 40 laptops to turn it on. You know, but today no one's selling, like, Audi's not going, would you like to buy an R18?
Yeah.
You know, and then you just, yeah, I'll drive it to Le Mans.
Exactly right.
Glickenhaus. You need a Glickenhaus for that.
You need, that's you do.
Cool. Jimmy G's on it.
I think he's built something really cool.
Oh, yeah. He wants to be Enzo Ferrari, and he seems to be succeeding at it so far.
And Ferrari just probably, you know, doesn't like him because, you know, for whatever reasons.
But, yeah.
But, so...
Okay, so he takes it to Le Mans.
He takes it to Le Mans. By the time he gets to Le Mans, Shelby had already come out with their FIA cars, which had the big rear wings, notch back door, 289 with Webers, mag wheels, and the owner of the car at that point was a Frenchman named Jean-Marie Vincent, or Vincent.
Uh-huh.
And he takes the car to Ford Racing of Europe, and he said, I want this to be converted to an FIA car.
Okay.
So they basically, Ford Racing was a big part. You know, they ran the Cobra Shelby team. They ran the race team.
Right.
And they did that. And that's what that car is there. It's as close as they could get. It doesn't
So the
have
point
a,
you picked in time.
Is that time.
Is that
I
time.
I wanted the mag wheels. I wanted the big engine. I wanted the Webers.
It's a 289 now?
It's a 289 with Webers.
Do we know where the original engine was? Do you have it?
I do.
You do? Of course you do.
Yeah. And
there's a coffee table somewhere.
No, it's in a crate. Fortunately, they saved it, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think to me, the look of that car right now is just checks every box.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it was like, I have always been a Shelby fan. I bought a Cobra in 1965.
Bought a Cobra in 1965?
Yep. And I could not get
like
it
in. From Phil Remington and Carroll Shelby?
No, I bought it from a kid in Beverly Hills that bought it new in 64.
Yeah.
By the way, I say a kid in Beverly Hills. I did not live in Beverly Hills. I lived in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Grew up in L.A. Went to L.A. high school. So I'm a center of the city.
You're a lifer.
I'm a jamoke, you know? So
pull those over, Zach, so everyone else can see.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find, like, you know, one that highlights that the change in the fenders is just amazing. And it completely transforms the attitude of the car.
Yeah.
That's
whatever,
like a little
dainty
British
Zach's
roadster.
Screen, which one
that's,
do I look?
That, well, you, I mean, you, that's
no, but
what's going
what
on
is,
the show.
What does the listener see?
That. The big
screen or the little screen?
They see
the little
they
screen.
They see exactly this.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, well, so that's CSX 2000.
Right.
That's 2001.
Yeah.
So, and there's a wonderful book called The First Three Shelby Cobras. And it's the story, the history of CSX 2000, 2001, and 2002.
Okay.
Because 2002 had a good history, too, because 2000 was retained by the Shelby family.
Yeah.
2001 was this car here, the black one. 2002 was the first factory, you know, kind of works car.
Mm-hmm.
And that was driven by Billy Krause and Dan Gurney. And
oh, yeah.
Different people like
that. Is
that
car still around, too? I'm sure
very
it is.
Very much.
Yeah.
It's 2000 and 2002 are owned by the Miller family.
Oh, yes.
In Utah.
Are they still at the museum there?
Yeah.
Is the museum still at the...
currently in Boulder, Colorado, because that's where they're keeping a lot of the cars.
That museum was super cool, man. The one at Miller Motorsports Park.
Okay, well, now that all the Cobras are in Boulder, Colorado, at Cobra Museum.
Oh.
And it's really worth
it. There's a Cobra Museum in Boulder? Did you know about that?
Nope. Brilliant. I don't think it was there when I was there.
Oh, my God. It's the best.
How long? Has it been there for a long time?
I want to say probably 20 years.
Get out of here.
I lived there for 10 years, yeah. Didn't know about it.
All right.
Well, not a lot of people do, and there's a fellow named Steve Volk and Bill Murray.
Not the Bill Murray, I imagine.
Not the Bill
Murray. The actor.
This is Bill Murray that restores cobras, but if you're in Boulder, you owe it to yourself to see the Cobra Museum. I mean, it is the finest museum of cobra. They have GT40s, the Daytona Coupe. They have everything there.
Cool. Let's see. You picked the right choice for that is, yeah, if I had to give my opinion. Black roll bar mags. Yeah, perfect.
And that was how it ran. It even ran with number one. So
with such an important piece of history, can you drive that comfortably? Would you drive that on the street?
I drove it from Budapest to Prague. I've driven it on the Colorado Grand.
Oh, cool.
I drive it to the Peterson. I drive it regularly.
Oh, that's good.
And let me just put a little
thing. I've only ever seen it at the museum,
right.
So I don't, yeah.
So I want to put a little shout out at some point, but this is probably the right time.
Anytime is the right time. What do you got?
On January 26th, the Peterson Museum is doing an all-American cruise-in at the Peterson. So January 26th from 8 until 10 in the morning is an all-American cruise, and we're featuring the cars of Shelby, okay?
Oh, there we go.
That's a really good image, right?
Yeah, we got the flyer up for you.
Great.
Bruce Meyer's American Cruise-In, Sunday, January 26th, 8 to 10 a.m. at the Peterson Museum.
And here's the bonus. If you stay until 10, from 10 to 12, we have a panel. And on that panel will be Aaron Shelby, the grandson, Pete Brock, the designer of the mm-hmm. Cobra Coupe.
Pete rules.
A.J. Bame, who wrote the book Go Like Hell.
Mm-hmm, good dude.
Charlie Agapu, who was the crew chief for Cobra at Le Mans.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And Lenny Chabas, who was a filmmaker. He's uh-huh. going to be there. And Peter Miles, Ken Miles' son.
Oh, rad.
And me.
And you. Wow,
but
that's crazy.
I'm going to be the moderator, and we're going to have a panel talking about the early years of Shelby and racing and so forth. So if your listeners just have a hankering to see some very cool stuff and to see a panel and share a panel that, you know.
It's a good panel.
It's a great
panel. It's a good panel.
Yeah.
You can go to Peterson with an E, PETERSEN.org, and click on events, and it is on the events calendar. And you, I mean, the Peterson is like the spot, obviously, but you're like a founder of the Peterson. So yeah. you and your partners took it from a department store to the original museum and now the completely crazy, amazing place that it is now.
It is just epic. I was there all morning.
You can be like, yo, come by the garage, and you mean the Peterson.
Yeah.
which is like kind of fucked up and kind of awesome. You got your name on a gallery there. I mean, it's extremely
legit.
It's a great
museum. So Bob Peterson and I were friends. It was Seibu Department Store, which was a Japanese department store, and then it became Orbox. Then it was empty. And then it became the Peterson Museum, and then we bought it all out. So I was the founding chair. I was there from day one, and still extremely involved.
I didn't move to Los Angeles until 2009, so I didn't know really much about it. I knew it existed, but I hadn't been there until then. So I really saw it for a year or two, and then there was the renovation, and now it's like, holy shit. Now it's so... You don't even have to really like cars, and you are still mm-hmm. overwhelmed by what a nice museum it is.
This is interesting because today I had lunch with a couple of our benefactors, and I said, "Why you're here having lunch at the Drago, our restaurant there?" I said,
"Which is good,
excellent,
good
yeah.
quality Caesar salad." Have had.
Yep. I said, "Look at the demographic that walks through this museum. You're going to see, you know, a diversity in gender, ethnicity." Mm-hmm. Age, you know, everything.
It's a good spot.
And that never would have happened 5 years ago before we redid the renovation.
No.
Before we redid it, they all looked like you and I.
Car nerds. It was a car nerds place.
T-shirts and Levi's, and we loved hot rods and goofy stuff. But now, it truly is a museum with a capital M.
Yeah.
We're well financed. Our gate will be close to 500,000 people.
That's awesome.
It is really
That's
awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I think the Hollywood stuff really helps. The movie cars help.
And for another week or so, 10 days, we've got my junk there, that winning numbers exhibit. So
is that only 10 more days?
Yeah, it's been there almost all year.
I know it has. There's so many cars of yours that we could talk about. What has the more interesting story? The 57 TR, the Bizzarini or the SoCal Speed Shop car?
Boy, those are a few of my faves.
I know.
So if
tell me a story, Bruce, okay, about one of these cars.
Okay, so go back in time and that's not bad either.
This is not the first Corvette to ever race at Le Mans. Is a pretty right. cool story too.
Okay. And that is what it is. It was a Cunningham car, and it was the first time Corvettes ever went to Le Mans, and they won their class, and it was a big deal. But the Bizzarini is a wonderful story.
Is it pronounced Bitz?
Bizzarini. Bizzarini.
I've been pronouncing Giotto it wrong Bizzarini. The whole time.
Well, how were you pronouncing
it? Bizzarini. Yeah, that's just an uncouth American.
Bizzarini. No, Bizzarini works too.
I just want to do it right, that's all.
Either one. And we answer to both. So the Bizzarini was designed by Giotto Bizzarini, who was the chief race engineer for Ferrari. He was a race car savant. He was hired right out of technical school to work for Alfa Romeo, and then Ferrari poached him from Alfa.
When he left the Formula One team, right?
Well, this was in late 50s.
Oh, okay, so later.
Yeah, and so he designed the GTO and was like a major force at Ferrari. Then there was a thing called the Palace Revolt, where after Dino died, Enzo's son, Laura, his wife, got very involved, almost rather than involved, was meddling, you know? And the guys in the factory were just, they just said, look at to Enzo, either if you want her to come run it, fine, but we keep her out while we're running. And he fired
her. He chose her.
He chose
her.
Yeah,
yeah. This is in a very recent documentary. I just saw like a reenactment. It's not in Ford versus Ferrari, is it?
I don't think
no,
so.
No, it's not, but it might be in.
It's a very important
It's in another
step.
One of those recent.
So Bizzarini
things,
went
yeah.
off, and I mean, just a yeah, brief,
he chose
a long
his wife
story.
He fired everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Don't mess with Enzo.
Oops.
He was a fiery guy. So, anyway, so Bizzarini went off to, and he designed the Iso Grifo. He went to work for Iso, which made refrigerators and Isetta scooters and so forth.
Yeah.
And the Iso company wanted to build road cars, and Bizzarini wanted to build race cars. So he built this car. He really.
Iso didn't really have that hatred of Ferrari the way Lamborghini did, right? Or if he did, we didn't hear the story about it. Is there a cool origin story for Iso, really, or not so much?
I don't think so.
Okay. They just happened to be very pretty?
Iso cars were, you know, the Iso Grifo, the Iso Rivolta.
Yeah.
They were nice, all Chevrolet powered.
Yeah.
And
but
so,
nice looking cars.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
And so anyways, but Bizzarini wanted to build his own race car, and he built that car. He actually drove it from Laverno, where he lived, where they built the car, to Le Mans, had two Frenchmen drive it, won their category, finished in the top 10, and he drove it home.
That's a very Glickenhaus move.
Yeah.
That is a super Jim Glickenhaus move. I should say Glickenhaus pulled a Bizzarini move.
And and you got the picture of that Bizzarini up there. There's a couple things you need to look at that picture. First of all, it's got kind of a cam back, you know, that kind
yeah.
of, which was very advanced, you know, aerodynamics. And the one that kind of got me was the sides are slab sides, okay?
Yeah.
And I remember when I bought the car, I was thinking, wouldn't it have been so much cooler if the sides kind of contoured under like the rear end is contoured? And Peter Brock said, Bruce, you don't get it. He said, those slab sides are the very first car to have slab sides, and that's Aero. He says, you look at any race car today, any
perfectly
of them,
slab sides.
Slab sides.
Yeah.
So Bizzarini was the first. This car.
Oh, interesting.
This car was 190 miles an hour down the straightaway at Le Mans. The only faster car was the big block Cobra, big block GT40. So this car was a front runner in top speed, had a Chevrolet engine, a mid engine, so the Chevy engine set
behind the front axle, right?
Behind the front axle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funky car in person. Like, it's weird because it's, I know it, these are very pretty. I understand that they are pretty, but the something about them, like the proportions are kind of wonky. I think it's maybe because like the cockpit is just seems like it's been like, it's almost like you took a normal car and pressed your hand on the roof and pressed the entire cockpit
down
in between the wheels. But holy shit. Look how far back the engine is.
Yeah. You have to.
It's like an AMG GT now.
It doesn't show in that picture, but there's a panel in the dashboard that is removed so you can work on the engine.
Oh, from the inside.
From the inside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
While you're racing, because that's what they did back then.
Yeah,
you know?
You had to do that back then.
I don't know if they did it while they were
What
running.
Is this thing like to drive, Bruce?
It's fun. I mean, it's plenty of power. It makes a glorious sound. There's that website, Petrolicious.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They did a nice video on it, which is kind of fun.
So here's a question. So this car and many of your other cars, the Ferrari TR, et cetera, the Corvette, the old Corvette, were built as race cars. And you are not racing them. You take them out for a nice cruise. You bring them to a show or whatever. How does something like this behave when you subject it to street car conditions?
Well,
or do you have it adjusted for that beforehand?
A little of both. Mm-hmm. Like on the Ferrari, the short wheelbase, we put smaller jets in it. We've kind of narrowed down the Venturis because with those big 46s on there, it just dumps fuel. Yeah. So what we did is we narrowed that down a bit and made it more drivable.
So you lose a little power, but
yeah,
it behaves.
But it's not like I'm trying to do 190 mile yeah. an hour, you know.
Can you could it. You actually tell the difference from driving it, or does it just seems
no,
like it runs
no.
better?
And the way, listen, I'm an old man. I'm not looking to set any speed records, you know. So I just want to experience the cars. I don't have to experience them in a full, you know,
yeah.
lock sideways skidder on Rodeo Drive or on PCH. So I drive respectfully and I enjoy the cars. And that's yeah. why I drive them to events. We drove them all to the Peterson. That photo you have up there.
On the Rodeo,
That's on the way to the Peterson Museum. There's five cars there.
There's a TR, a Cobra, a GTO, and I can't really see beyond
it's
that.
It's the Bizzarini.
But, oh, the Bizzarini. Oh, yeah. It's not the GTO, it's the Bizzarini, excuse me.
And then there's a 935.
Oh yeah,
that thing is pretty
nuts. Your 935 is not like a normal 935 either. You have a special crazy 935.
Yeah, no, that is crazy, nuts.
It's a Kramer K3, winner of 79 24 Hours of Le Mans, 700 horsepower. Good lord.
It is a good lord.
Well, all the K3 cars were bananas, right? I mean, they were so fast. They had so much power and the manual boost controller. I think Lee Keen drove one at Rennsport, and I remember watching the video, and he was just turning this knob like a faucet, and it was just, you know, it was more and more.
It is so powerful.
Yeah, and they actually
it's 800 horsepower. I mean, and it beat all the prototypes.
Yeah, it swept the podium at Le Mans.
Overall, an overall winner beat the 936. That's bad.
I mean, today that just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen.
No, now today an overall winner has to be a prototype.
Yeah,
P1.
Would you?
P2.
I mean, what can you do with this car to enjoy it?
Well, there's an event called Luftekult.
Oh, yeah.
Which is air-cooled Porsches.
Yeah.
And we drove it there.
Oh, that's fun.
On the streets.
So, when you're Bruce, you can do that. Bruce rolled up to Radwood in a Fox Body Mustang police car, fully CHP, like not even, it wasn't even like a goof, like
yeah, no, it's the real deal.
No, it had all fully functional, like people aren't allowed to have that.
Yeah.
That thing rules. I love
that.
Isn't
that a cool thing?
Yeah.
That's one of my sons. So I was one of the founders of an organization called CHP 1199 Foundation.
Is that still, it's still going?
Oh, very.
I thought it kind of stopped.
Oh, no.
I misheard, I guess.
You misheard.
Okay.
No, it's very active. And so I always, you know, I admire the highway patrol. So I bought this car from a highway patrolman that drove him in the period, went to the auction, because what they do with those old patrol cars, they auction them
all.
Yeah,
the police auctions,
they take all the good stuff off and auction it off. So this guy followed the car.
That's it, middle picture at the top there.
It had never been hit. And he restored the car, brought it all back to life. You know, the wigwag, headlights,
oh my God,
siren.
There's so much authentic gear on it.
Yeah.
It's got all the gear.
Yeah.
And it's got the right wheels, and it's got the right paint. It's,
no,
it's proper.
Like,
and I remember you had the cowboy hat. You were very, like, Jeff Bridges as a sheriff in the Southwest with that.
And it's so funny because people say, you know, like, can you drive that on the street? Absolutely.
Yeah, when you're Bruce, you can get away with this kind of thing.
I'm not Parnelli, but I maybe talk my way out.
Right. What's your take on the modern stuff? I mean, do you go out and have a go in the new cars? Do you care?
I am way more appreciative of the vintage cars.
Yeah. Because of the story?
It's just because I don't have to go warp speed.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
You like tame things like the 935, you know?
Yeah. Something, you know, I can handle. I mean, I am so unqualified for that car. You have no idea. That car.
Have you had a go in it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, on the home track?
Oh, absolutely.
You said you race motorcycles. You can't be totally unqualified.
Oh, I'm not the worst, but I'm certainly not a front runner. That car, 800 horsepower, 850. If you're not heading dead straight, you best not put your foot into it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just wicked fast.
Yeah, scary stuff.
Yeah, and I've run Bonneville. I'm a member of the 200 mile an hour club.
So oh yeah,
I like.
What is your Bonneville car of choice?
I went to, my Roadster for sure.
Is that in here?
But I did 224 in a Camaro.
That's this guy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
This is a 32 Ford based.
32. Well, it's actually. It's a
29
fiberglass. No, you're right. It's a 29 with a 32 grill. It looks like a 32.
You ran 200 in that?
I did.
Awesome. When? Yeah.
So that's 1,000 horsepower. And I did that about 4 years ago.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. I mean, that's the most fun ride I've ever had.
That's got to be an experience because that is not like a new Camaro buttoned up, you know, Koenigsegg anything. Yeah. I mean,
there's like barely a windshield.
Yeah, that's fury just fighting its way through the air like a brick.
Well, it is a brick. And so the when you're going straight in that car, the back wants to pass the front because the front is saying, whoa, it's got that big front. Like,
it's like a wall. Yeah.
Yeah, like hitting a wall. And the front wants to stop. The back has plenty of power and wants to pass the front. So you have to modulate the throttle. You don't want to get too ambitious or you're just going to spin it.
And you've got the funky salt tires, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which are like little balloony sort of slicks.
Not that you need front brakes, but there are none.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
But you're able to shoot. Yeah, parachute. Parachute.
You got two shoots.
Yeah.
Did you train up to do something like that? I mean, because it's
you
such
have
a,
to
a
be
different
qualified.
Skill set.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's you have to be qualified. You start with 125 mile an hour top speed, and then 150, 175, and then 200.
But do they start you? You know, 120 in this car is very different from 120 in the Aston Outsider or a new BMW.
And you're
BMW.
On salt, so it's moving. Even at 120, 130, 40, 50, you know, it's very equivalent to me like racing a motorcycle on dirt track when you're just full chat. Mm-hmm. And the thing moves around. I mean, the first time it starts moving around, you get a little like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But at the end, you're just comfortable with it.
You just stay on your feet. You know, you let it move under you a little bit.
You let it move.
Yeah.
And by the way, if that car wants to go to Arizona, adios, you're going to Arizona. You know?
Yeah. I drove on Bonneville, but in a big power front-wheel drive car, which I did in a Jetta. It was like a Volkswagen Press thing.
Okay. It's very cool.
It was fine.
Did you do the regular Bonneville deal?
It wasn't Speed Week. It was after Speed Week.
Okay,
they did a
World
media
Finals
thing. Yeah. And so
it's still fun, isn't it?
I drove that thing, this Jetta land speed record. I went 211 in a Jetta, pulled the chute. It was bitching.
So you're a full deal.
Yeah, but it didn't count. I don't get the jacket
it
or nothing.
Does count.
It counts enough. It counts for me.
Hell
yeah. Yeah, it was cool. But front drive was interesting.
It's interesting. Isn't
it was
the whole experience.
Yeah.
People think you just go to Bonneville and floor it, you know?
No, you have to drive.
The car's got to be set up.
But this is a whole, you're doing it in a 29 Ford.
It's awesome.
Way different
than
a factory prepped Bonneville. I mean, I literally showed up and on my warm up run did 190 and it didn't feel like anything.
You didn't have to qualify and get a license then.
I have a competition license, like a NASA comp license, but they didn't make me do nothing.
Yeah, that's good. Well, so it was a private event.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but during their sanctioned events,
they would have,
very
sure.
particular.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So I kind of look at Bonneville like the rodeo. You know, there's bull riders, and then there's, you know, barrel racers and so forth. And the guys that drive the roadsters are the bull riders, you know. I mean, it's an experience being out of doors, in a car that has no aerodynamic, and it's just a treat. For me, it's the most fun run I've ever done in anything.
What's sketchier, Roadster or Belly Tanker? Belly Tanker to me adds the element of claustrophobia.
So, yeah. Like, I've never gone, 200 in the Belly Tank.
Have you driven it?
I have, but not anywhere near. It's like Alex Exidius went 198 in that thing.
The Belly Tanker.
And by the way, you know the streamliners, you know, the Bonneville cars that are set up to go 200-400 miles an hour. That is like takes it to a whole nother level. I mean, George Poteet is one of my all-time, heroes. And he went 400 and to 20, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're at full mercy of that machine. You don't drive your way out. If it decides it wants to explode or do something nasty, you're going, it's going to be nasty.
R.I.P. Jesse.
Yeah, that's it. That's the car, Speed Demon.
That's crazy. That's an aircraft without wings. That's a straight-up aircraft without wings on it. And oh, by the way, slab-sided.
Oh,
tell
yeah.
you what, that's a very pretty vehicle.
It is stunning. It's
an incredibly good-looking car.
Oh, my God. George Poteet's just a cool dude. And does it show how fast he went in that thing? I want to say it was 450 or something
so
like that.
So sketchy.
I'll find it.
Well, he looks.
And Charlie Nürburgring went 414. I mean, you know, 400 miles an hour.
No, thanks. I'm good.
Yeah, I think I'm good, too.
I'm good,
yeah,
man.
That's right.
Okay. What, or like 150 to 200 in a boat? You know, that's when you really start, you know, like hydrofoil
stuff.
Have
you done that?
I did like 110 in one of those catamarans that had like
four
outboards.
Yeah,
like
really?
A Coke runner boat. Yeah, super sketchy.
That's probably like doing 400 on.
Yeah, and you have there's like the chairs where you're like pseudo standing, like the high back chairs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You gotta put your head against the thing.
I mean, anything over 100 on the waters is.
Yeah, that's like 300 on land, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah,
you know,
you're going.
It's all relevant. George Poteet went 429 in 2016.
Wow. That's pretty damn good.
Wow. That's a very svelte, smooth.
And he also went upside down in that car, too. There's a,
of course.
If you can Google the video.
Not supposed to do that, George.
You're not supposed to.
Shiny side up, literally.
And that's right. And I'm telling you, you know, I mean, stuff can happen at that speed.
Oh, yeah.
Even in a like a roadster, if you lose it and it starts flipping or doing something weird,
oh yeah,
it's not a pleasant deal.
Do you remember that video? It was like Wide World of Sports, but I remember it was like an RX-7, pretty famous video. And he's driving 200 plus, and all of a sudden it just takes off in the air and starts to spin.
Yep. Whoa!
I mean, it
like a flat
it's frisbees,
kind of
it flat
Yikes.
Spins quite high in the air.
No,
Yikes.
You know you don't. If you look at some Bonneville crashes, you see the guys that are going. You know, 150 to 250, and you just can't believe how traumatic that is.
Yeah.
Even though there's nothing to hit, you're up in the air, you're on your side, you're every which way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. What my biggest fear was fire, because you know you start at the finish starting line, and you have an 8 mile run.
Yeah,
you got
they
5
come,
miles.
Come out there. Is the thing.
Yeah. You could be a crispy critter by the time they get there.
We need to make the world's fastest fire truck go 300 miles an hour.
There you go. Yeah.
You just chase the cars down.
Yeah.
Is that roadster streetable at all?
Not even a little.
It's like 15
no,
to 1 compression.
Like a drag show. Yeah, no, it's just ridiculous.
It's cool. That's at the Peterson. I have seen it.
Yeah, that's right.
I've seen it. What is, if you had to pick a period of cars to drive, because you got cars from 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, all on, what do you think is a sort of peak engagement?
60s.
60s?
For me, that's what it is. I mean, I still like a 67 Camaro. I like the 62 Corvette with a 327. I like the Cobra, Bizzarini. Short wheelbase Berlina. Those are all 60s cars. That's, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, so I'm going to be 80 next year. I mean, it just
no, seriously?
It freaks me out, you know.
Wow. You being
but I think to myself, I was born at the exact right time in history. When you know, the development of the hot rod, which I'm a huge hot rod fan, right up to, you know, today's world. I you know, from here on, it's going to be electric, and I'm sure they're going to do a lot of cool things with that. But I grew up with, you know, loving hot rods. Just the times when things were just, when we were racing motorcycles, these weren't professionals. These were amateurs. We'd go out and we'd race.
When you could kind of just be an
amateur
racer with your... Oh, yeah,
you needed a pickup truck and a you know, leather jacket, you know.
Yeah. We have, I mean, on the other hand, I think that we do have a lot of affordable racing available now.
Agree.
I don't know. I think like peak usability versus engagement is like 80s, but it might just be generational.
Totally generational.
Was the 60s when they started to figure out, like, you know, making things a little bit lighter? They started figuring out handling. I mean, I've never driven a hot rod or anything from the 50s or before. Well, like in the 30s, it was just straight line stuff, and that was all speed. But what have you driven anything from 40s or 50s that was meant to run road courses? And how does that compare to, like, you know, C1
Corvette
or something?
Like that Le Mans Corvette or something.
Or like the Corvette. And even the Testarossa, those are 50s cars.
Yeah.
And they're not particularly fast, and they're very crude and very harsh. So the 50s were not very sophisticated. The 60s got more sophisticated. And you just look at the run, like, you know, the Cobras and all that.
Yeah,
those,
yeah.
Those were, you know, in the, anyways, you start with the 40s, you start with the MGs. Those were the really first,
like,
sports
the TCs
cars.
And TCs, TDs. The, yeah,
those are what started sports car racing. If yeah. you look at the early years of,
it's like hill climbs and stuff, right?
100%
in England, yeah,
hill climbs, airport races,
yeah.
And the GIs came back after the war. By the way, an MG, they could probably bring back an MG for $1,000, mm-hmm. and that's what Phil Hill started to race. And Carroll Shelby, all these people raced.
I think Bruce
MGs.
McLaren might have, was it an MG or a 7? He might have had an Austin 7, but it was one of the more tiny things.
Everybody started with an MG.
Yeah.
So you know, and those were really crude in the 40s, and then the 50s they were kind of getting them together. The Jaguar came out with the 120, and mm-hmm. the cool drivers kind of, you know, moved up to the Jags.
And but then, you could buy one Porsche. Of those in a showroom and then literally just go show up and race it.
100%.
Yeah.
You put some tape over the headlights and just go.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's better than what we've got.
And some of them didn't even have roll bars. I mean, yeah. you know, nothing.
Yeah.
Guys
that's
got
the,
killed.
That's the, we prefer to be ejected from the wreck period.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The English.
Sketchy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Oh, the documentary One, have you ever seen it? The number one about the evolution of safety in Formula One. It's a phenomenal documentary.
Phenomenal
yeah.
documentary.
Yeah, I love it.
Unbelievable.
I've probably watched it like 50 times.
I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
And I'm due to see it again. I mean, that is
it's
that
good.
Is
and Michael
so
Fassbender
good.
Should narrate everything.
Oh my
did
God.
You like Ford versus Ferrari?
I did.
Did you
yeah.
find it to be historically accurate enough for you?
Already.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It was good enough. They didn't, you know, go to the stupid side with, you know, Carroll Shelby having sex with, you know, Lynn,
everybody.
With everybody. so they kept it historic and it satisfied both the gearheads
yeah.
and the movie lovers.
Yeah.
I have not heard a single person that didn't enjoy that movie.
You know who didn't enjoy it? The descendants of Leo Beebe. They made Leo Beebe really
that.
Villainy. And I think he was mildly incompetent, but I don't think he was that mean.
I think if anybody got the short, it would be BB.
Yeah,
and
he got the shaft.
And Henry, when he was crying in the car. You know, I mean, I think the Ford family probably thought that was a bit overdone. I don't. Yeah. I bet he never did that. That was a bit of drama. But you're right. I think everybody was happy with it except BB and
Leo
Ford.
Leo Beebe might have been. His, if he's still alive, he might not have been so mm-hmm. happy with that.
I had honestly never heard his name until that movie. And I came out of the movie going, well, you know, fuck this dude. And then, I talked to Sam Smith and he's like, yeah, they didn't really give him a fair shake, but you know, they had to like find a villain because otherwise it's just yeah. a bunch of people racing each other and there's no real villain in it, I guess.
Yeah.
And
no, they never tried to keep Ken Miles out of Le Mans. He raced in Le Mans in 65. In the movie, he's all like, yeah, all the cars broke, I told you so. It's like, you were driving one, Ken!
That's it. And I think the whoever did the casting did a good job, except for one person was completely miscast.
Matt Damon as Carroll
no,
Shelby?
I thought he did good.
You say you got a picture up
I
on your Instagram.
I thought he did good, but he was a little short.
Phil Remington.
Oh, it wasn't so
Phil,
bad.
Yeah, the guy with the mustache. He looked like a porn star.
A little bit, yeah.
And Phil Remington was a handsome, big guy, not a skinny guy, but a brilliant man. He's the there were two people that made Carroll Shelby. Carroll Shelby. One was Ken Miles, and the mm-hmm. other was Phil Remington.
I guess if we're looking at these pictures of Phil Remington, I guess the casting was a little
no,
off.
It wasn't.
He looks like Tanner Faust.
He does look like Tanner. Faust.
Holy crap!
Yeah,
Phil Remington.
Yeah, he looks
right
a lot.
100%. Tanner's a good looking guy.
Very
Phil
good
Remington's
looking.
A good looking guy.
Yeah, and Phil Remington was a genius.
Yeah. And that's the only later in years, Carroll Shelby gave credit to Phil Remington and to Ken Miles.
Yeah,
and he didn't share the limelight a lot, but those guys really, really were worthy of
the. I thought the Ken Miles crash death scene at the end of the movie was treated in a very interesting way. Kind of as you would experience it if you were just sitting on the side of the racetrack, kind of just another day. you know, from far away.
Yep.
Not turning into like an action sequence.
No, a puff of smoke, and that's and that's probably what most people saw because it was in the back straight at Riverside.
And that's kind of how
100%
those things happen.
Yep.
It was very interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation.
And location spotting in that movie was fun. Like, what tracks did they use to recreate?
They ran Willow Springs backwards.
Yeah, and they ran Road Atlanta in reverse for some of it. Yeah, Willow Springs was funny because they didn't have to do anything.
Yeah,
they just brought up some old cars.
And Willow is where they actually raced in period.
Right, yeah.
I know.
That track's been around.
But they didn't have to do nothing. They didn't change the signs. They didn't do anything. It's exactly like it looks now.
No sets need to be built.
You go, go fully back in time by just going to a track day at Willow Springs today.
You can. Yeah, absolutely.
Why not?
So what cars, have the cars that you've ended up with, have you sought them out or have they come your way and you have been smart enough to jump?
That's a really good question. For the most part, they've come my way. For a very long time, I felt that hot rodding, the sport, was very underappreciated in American automobile culture. So I made it a point of going through old hot rod magazines and finding what I thought were the pivotal hot rods of the period, and I sought those out. So I did seek
hence
out.
Hence the SoCal Speed Shop car.
And the Pearson Brothers Coupe, that was the red, white, and
the
blue.
The red
coupe.
One, yeah.
Red, white, and blue. So that was the first restoration that I did. And then I went the Doan Spencer car and the McGee car and, you know, that. That guy's, that's a beautiful.
Pearson Brothers Coupe 34 Ford.
Yeah.
So what was it about this thing, which is very, very pretty?
Okay, so that was on the cover of Hot Rod in 1948. Or 1950. Excuse me, 1950. And it was just such an extremely beautiful car, the chop on it, I'd remembered the car, and so I went out. I heard that it existed. I went out to the Dry Lakes, bought it from the fellow Tom Bryant, and that was my very first restoration. And by the way, when I was restoring these cars, it had nothing to do with like I'm going to go steal that car and restore it and sell it for a bunch of dough.
Right.
Because when I bought that car.
Stay close to the mic.
Oh, yeah,
sorry. Radio show.
Right. Forgot. When I bought that car, I paid stupid money. So thought everybody.
Uh-huh.
And
stupid money for the time. Who's
the
laughing
time.
Now?
Yeah. I don't know who's laughing now. I never did it for an investment reason. I did it because I wanted the world to know how important hot rodding was. And that's the very first coupe, really, that started the Coupes Club. Before that, everybody ran roadsters. And the thing looks like it's done by a French designer.
It's mean.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So I picked that car because I thought the aesthetic is good. By the way, I don't care how important a car is. If I don't like the look of it, I can't warm up to it. So every car that I've ever bought, in my eye, is a beautiful thing of the period.
Yeah. How bad of a shape was that in when you found it?
Horrible shape. Okay. But you know what's interesting about Bonneville and Bonneville is that what they do, they get something that really works, and then to make it go faster, they just add more horsepower. They don't re-engineer the suspension.
Yeah.
So Tom Bryant went over 200 miles an hour in that car.
Uh-huh.
He had a big block blown Chevy in it. They just kept adding bigger engines and bigger, not changing the suspension. I mean,
it was all the same, like the same shocks from the 40s.
100%. Like who dies and all the shocks, the whole setup, identical. So that car has the original chassis, the original suspension,
boy.
And we went back to the flathead.
Okay.
But the metalwork, having spent so much time on the salt, had corrosion.
Yeah.
Steve Davis, who is like a genius in metal shaping. He did it. Pete Shaporis from SoCal Speed Shop.
Is a lot of it left or from the original or just needed surfacing?
99%.
Oh, cool. Nice.
But by the way, for people, like the difference in the shape, if you don't know what a 34 Ford looks like the front is kind of the slant. I really like these. I like the 33 and 34 more than the 32s. But it's kind of like a slightly angled shovel. And then when you switch to this far more streamlined shape.
It's crazy. It's the kind of stuff you didn't really see for another 20 years, you know, in hot rodding.
I'm a fan of 32s just because they were like what started it all. But if I had a choice, I mean, I think the 33 is the most beautiful. The louvers, the way they're curved.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you even know different. That you
He's
know
a nerd.
I love around hot rods a lot. Yeah. I used to go to Hot Dogs Nights like
I
want to
say, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but you, I guess you're in your.
Now 38.
We're both 38.
Are you right? Really? Okay, yeah. Well, I didn't peg that.
He's an easy 38. I'm a hard 38.
My daughter's 38. So you were born in 72 or something like that?
82.
I meant 82. Yeah. My math isn't great.
That's okay. It happens.
But there's not a lot of guys your age that would know what a 32 or a 33 or a 34 would look like. I think that's pretty cool.
That's kind of where my knowledge stops.
There's hope. Because people say, like, what's the future of hot rodding? What's the future of these old cars? I'm clueless. I didn't do it for, you know, that reason. Yeah. But most guys your age would have no clue and have a more interest in a GT3 Porsche or something like that.
Turning has its benefits. I will say that. Like, you know, I was around those cars a lot in high school, and, like, they didn't turn or stop. You can make them do that now, but you're taking parts off of new things, like, you know, Ride Tech and other companies, like putting the new tech on the old thing.
Was your dad a hot rodder a little bit?
No, there was just the only car show that was in Santa Cruz was a hot rod show, because that was in the 90s. So the only cars people really cared about were hot rods for a while. Like, there wasn't Radwood, and so I'd go there, and I was just a kid, and I just liked all the stuff. So then I started going to Hot August Nights, taking photos, and I have all these, you know, old, like, printed photographs of, like, oh, there's a blown 33 with flames on it, and there's another one and another one, because that's what
cool.
I was super into.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on point.
Dude, I mean, he's on point.
Yeah.
You're looking like, you know, my grandson across the table.
I just gave a tour to someone who wants to queue. It was someone who's in their 20s and has a 32 Ford with flames on it and wants to keep it at my place. He works at SpaceX as an engineer.
I love it. Have you been to SpaceX? Have you toured SpaceX?
I haven't. I heard it's cool.
Oh, God. It is
He
so
drove
cool.
up here in a Tesla. He drove up here in a Model 3 dual motor.
Makes sense.
No, we're not it's talking okay. about that.
That's, I like that car.
That's secret. It's my secret.
Well, you can't. The problem is it's impossible to have a nuanced conversation. The freaks all come in.
Well, if you go to SpaceX and you look at the guys, you know, like you go to Ford Motor Company or something, you know, they're, you know, in most places they're kind of in Mercedes, they're in their shop coats. And they're all kind of look like the three of us. You go to SpaceX, I bet there's not two people in that whole plant that aren't tattooed, like like with sleeves and piercings, and you know they all look like outcasts, but they're so damn smart and they're doing what they love. And I mean, it's just such a rush. It's so cool going.
I see SpaceX employees out and about in this area because I live here a lot, and a lot of them live right around here.
Yeah.
And I always end up in interesting conversations with them when I see them in the jackets.
They're doing what they want to do, and they look like what they want to look like. It wouldn't be what would look like, but it's not what.
Nah, you can have tattoos now. No one gives a shit anymore.
Yeah,
it's all good. Piercings, tattoos, no one cares.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, nobody cares.
I'm glad my kids don't have them, but it doesn't bother me.
I know, you and my dad would lament them.
Well, you had this sweet stash, Bruce. Check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. Did you sing in Fog Hat?
Oh, my God.
What a great picture of you.
So good.
You were way cool.
So that was in 1970.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, I had a big mustache and shoulder-length hair.
Dude, you were there, man.
I look like Dirk Diggler, whoever.
You do. That's right, yeah. 100%.
But you got a sparkle in your eye. You're like, I'm going to go 200 miles an hour in a car that it shouldn't do 20 miles an hour in.
Yeah.
You're like, tomorrow.
Yeah.
You look like one of the guys from Almost Famous.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Do we have anything from the
Almost
fans?
Almost Famous. Is that the movie?
The Cameron Crowe movie.
Was that where they just missed the Rolling Stones that came? Was that?
It's where the kid who's a music journalist follows like a band around the country with Kate Hudson. And
there's another one about this band that wanted to meet the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or something,
uh-huh.
and they were playing at some place,
uh-huh.
and the Stones were supposed to get there,
uh-huh.
and then they didn't, and the band leaves, and then the Stones arrived late, and they missed their moment. Anyways,
oh, no.
I forget.
I don't know. Someone's screaming at their radio right now, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Do we have anything specific for Bruce first? Anything? Oh, there we go. Wait, third one down. Ray Lee says, Bruce, do you keep all of your cars in running, driving ready condition like Leno? If so, can you talk about the most challenging aspects of keeping all those cars running?
So every car we have runs, everyone, and that's really important to me because I drive them and I try driving them all. I have a friend that works with me and we keep everything running. I don't do all the. I'm not very good at. I'm good at disassembling. I'm world class disassembler.
Yeah.
So if that tells you something, we go to the specialists. You know, we don't try and fix the Ferraris or the Porsches or, you know, Jags at home. You know, we go to somebody that really knows what they're doing.
I read a quote from you that said, "When you get a car, I think it was from the New York Times last year, and said, when you buy a car." You find the car you want, you pay whatever it takes to get that car, and then you have the best restoration done possible, and that way it only stings once.
God, so you read that thing. Actually, I call it, you cry only once.
Oh, you cry only once. Oh, that's close. I got close. Yeah.
I say you buy the best and cry only once,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. So wait, so how many
that's great.
How many cars do we have to keep running right now? What are we at?
Oh, I don't talk about it. It's okay. Not that many. It looks like I have more than I have. I don't have that many. I don't have anything like Leno. Oh, my God.
No, I didn't think it was going to be an enormous number.
Leno has a whole staff and very qualified guys.
He has a staff.
And by the way,
a machine shop. He's
oh,
got
my
a
God.
Water jet.
And Jay Leno just defines enthusiasts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's such the real guy.
Yeah.
He loves to make them run them and drive them and share them.
And he knows every nut and bolt 100%. Of every single car. He's meant to, his Jay Leno's garage show, he's way happier doing that than interviewing celebrities.
Completely. And I love his TV show. You know, the TV show that he has.
Yeah.
You know, that he just does crazy shit. You know,
yeah,
that
he's great.
Just like, what happens if we make this car fly or do something, you know?
I would do with that much money.
Tim, yeah. And he has Tim on there and who's the ventriloquist?
Jeff Dunham.
Jeff's another guy.
Yeah, he's got
really good guy.
Yeah. We were talking about his Batmobiles last episode.
And I kid Jeff. I mean, I wouldn't have one of his cars. You know,
it's
but
hilarious.
Damn, I'm happy he's got him.
That's
because he loves him. You know, we were over there and he had this van, you know, with some weird graphics on the side and a porthole. And he said, this was the Chevy, like,
it's
whatever.
Like an A-team van.
Yeah,
yeah,
like
it's
an
a shaggin' wagon van.
Yeah, the shaggin' wagon. And you know, with a shaggin' carpet. And I just love Jeff's enthusiasm.
Yeah.
He's another real guy.
He's
real car guy.
You know that smart car he's got that's done up like the Batmobile? Have you ever seen that silly thing? He brought that out to Cars and Coffee.
By the way, he drove his Batmobile is currently on display at the Peterson.
Yeah, yeah.
In our Hollywood thing. And he drove it there.
Yeah. It's got an LS7 in it.
Oh, yeah. No, Jeff's so the real deal.
We talked about it last time. I made fun of him for bringing that smart car out. And he goes, well, my other Batmobile's at home. And I didn't understand what he meant until the following week when he showed up in the ad. I went, oh, you win. Okay.
Yeah. Now, do you still go to the, Destin's Supercars?
Sometimes. You know where my favorite new one is? The Porsche Experience Center Cars and Coffee, which is the first Saturday of every month.
Is it the first Saturday of every month? I got to put that
down. It rules. I love it because for a few reasons. They got the food and stuff is all, it's all like, it's all there, so you know it's all good. They got a great bathroom set up if you need it.
As an old man, I do.
It matters. They got a place to be indoors and sit down if you want to get off your feet. And
really? So what time does it start?
8 o'clock.
And goes until?
10:30. It's awesome.
Okay, I gotta do that.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Zwart.
Tell me again.
It's the first Saturday of the month. We'll send you an email with it later. Rise and Shine,
that?
It's called. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And what you do is
Don't forget.
Yeah, you come in early. You come in 15 minutes early with me and Jeff, and we get upfront parking.
Okay.
Because they literally lock the gate. Zwart.
Just kidding.
Come on. They literally lock the gate until 8 o'clock, so people line up outside to get in. There's like 100 cars lined up outside.
They must love you when you come in early.
Oh, yeah. They open it up.
That's how to make friends. Now I
got a hard card over there. It's cool. It's cool. Yeah, it's called the morning shift.
Okay, cool.
Let's see. Nathan says, Bruce, after the amazing prank Bruce Canepa pulled on you and your 934, did you pull a revenge prank? What's he talking about?
You not know about
no,
that?
No, I missed this one. What's he talking about?
Oh, my.
Sorry.
Thank you for the question. So Bruce Canepa is a good buddy of mine. You must know Canepa when you're up at Santa
mm-hmm.
Cruz.
Yep.
He's in Scotts Valley now. So the 935 we had was owned and driven by the Whittington brothers.
Okay.
And if you read into that a little bit, they were the most prolific drug dealers probably in history.
Oh.
And by the way, they went to jail.
Okay.
And
oh, they weren't that good then, were they?
This is a Porsche.
They were
hell.
They were great drivers. They drove that car to overall win at Le Mans. And I say, you know,
it was the Coke, right?
Well, no, it goes. Well, it's interesting.
These guys just do not lose speed at night.
One driver, 24
that's
right, hours
straight. Right. What is it about? They got one driver, yeah. That's funny. So. But they raced Le Mans. They raced unlimited aircraft. I mean, they were badass, you know. So they got caught. You know, it was all during that IMSA period, you know, the International Marijuana Smugglers Association.
That's hilarious.
So many of those guys dealt. You know, you had Randy Lanier and John Paul.
And
the Whittingtons. Anyways,
and you also had the offshore powerboat racing thing, which was going on in Florida. It's a whole other story. It gets wild down there.
Same group. It is exactly the
summer
same
home, winter home.
Did that originate, you know how NASCAR came from running moonshine and running from the cops? Did the offshore powerboat come from like running from the Coast Guard?
Yes. Yes.
Did it really?
Yes. Offshore powerboat racing.
That's really insane. You know, Arnaud. I mean,
Don Arnaud.
They build boats for these guys.
Yep.
Now, I'm not a drug expert, but these two guys really won the race. So they went to jail. The car was donated to the Indianapolis Speedway Museum. I traded them and did a transaction with them. I traded them one of their most famous Indy winners for this car. And so Bruce Canepa, you know, restored it. It really didn't need restoration, but he had to put it all back together and get it running perfect. And we decided we were going to run it at Laguna Seca.
Uh-huh.
Just before, like, I think the event at Laguna Seca was February, March, something like that. In November, the Whittington brothers were getting re-indicted for money laundering and for jet charter. In other words, they would charter a jet to some drug dealer for a zillion dollars, you know, when you could charter the jet for less than a zillion. I don't know how all that fancy finance works, but anyway, so there's a fellow named Albert Arciero, who was very famous in the old days, Arciero brothers. Albert Arciero, Bruce Canepa, Chip Conner, and Charlie Nierberg are really good friends of mine. They decided, and we were all circulating the press releases showing the DEA walking out with computers and filing cabinets. They locked down the whole
hashtag provenance.
The whole Whittington. we were all thinking, oh, too bad. Looks like they're going to jail again. Blah blah blah. So Albert said, wouldn't it be fun if we confiscate Bruce Meyer's 935 under the auspices of the DEA.
That's funny.
You can Google on there, put Bruce Meyer DEA prank, and you're going to see some amazing photos.
Oh, my God,
photos.
That's hilarious. That's very funny.
They
showed up with a truck?
Oh, yeah. No, they not only showed up with a truck.
Oh, bravo,
look at
Canepa.
Some of those pictures. Oh, bravo, I know. They got
the
me
jackets.
So hard.
They loaded it up. They had it on the truck. Oh no. Amazing.
I even helped push it on the truck.
That's amazing.
Show that one.
How far away was the truck when you realized that you would not have to give up the car?
So I that's a good question. So it was about a half an hour ordeal. You're gonna see some great pictures there.
What a great set of photos you've got now, though.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
But can you scroll down? You see the guy in the DEA jacket.
Oh, you got to get back to him, back at him for that. That's super funny.
Yeah, there you go. Go to this picture.
The ones with the guys up front in the DEA jackets is very good. That's awesome.
They got me so hard.
Yeah, they got you good.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is. That's a very good prank. Bravo, Bruce.
I know.
That's fantastic.
Canepa, so all four of those guys, they spent a lot of money. They had a movie producer. They had a consultant. They had four actors. They rented all the you know, the original
SUVs
badges,
and
the SUVs.
Wow.
The license plate frame was a U.S. government.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, that's the picture. That's when they first came.
Well, because it's
right
probably
there.
Hard to pull one over on someone like you. You're not going to give up
was
the
there.
Car for like
there were
anybody.
There were hundreds of people around
crazy.
Witnessing this, and not one person. Not one
nobody
person
thought,
no, no, because nobody, first of all, these guys all had Glocks. They had handcuffs.
That's all you need.
Badges.
If people see, oh, gun, they're like, that's a real cop.
Yeah, somebody said, why were you so calm? I'm thinking to myself,
my God.
Like, what would you do?
You got kind of a happy face on there talking to fake Charlie Sheen.
That's the head guy. That guy was a special forces guy. And he was the consultant. He said, I'll do the job myself.
How are you
anyway,
smiling?
So to answer her question, those are the guys that were.
Oh, they brought it back.
Yeah. So the question is, they spent so much money and put so much thought into this. Like, there's no, if I just came up with some crazy concept, it wouldn't. It just, you know, I just left it alone because I don't want them coming back with like the next phase.
The backstory of it being the guy getting reindicted.
Right, it made sense.
That sells it.
It
so
totally
hard.
Made sense to me. That's why I was like, if it had just come out of the blue, I'd say bullshit. You know, this is a total prank. Yeah. No, get your hand. You guys go play somewhere.
I thought you were going to tell me they put a fake Kilo in there or something that. But no, this is way better.
Oh no,
that's amazing.
These are great shots.
Oh, it's amazing. The next question on there was: are there any cars that you think people should look out for as future classics? It's interesting Nathan asked that, because Bruce, you don't buy cars because you think they are going to be classics.
Yeah, I don't. I just buy what I like, and that's what I tell everybody. You know,
what's the most recent car you bought? Including the Tesla, like a car,
a Ford GT.
Okay.
And I, you know, I got a bespoke color, and it's
a new
very,
one?
Very understated.
What color?
It's called Atomic Silver. It's a very, it's a beautiful thing.
It's just a fairly middle of the road silver.
Yeah, well, it's a smoky silver. It's 5-stage paint. It really is beautiful.
Cool.
But what I'm thinking is, if somebody comes to you, you know, first of all, you got to buy what you like.
Well, that's all. Because, that's the most important thing, because you're sitting on it for a while.
And like, if you buy something, you think, well, this, I'm going to make a killing on this. And then it doesn't make the killing, you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
And you're going to be very unhappy. But if you bought something, even if you think it's the right thing, and it doesn't do what you expected it to do financially, at least you like it.
At least you've had a good time.
You like it.
And also, so many people don't do the complete math. They do money in, money out. They don't do maintenance, insurance, tires, gas, blah, 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 washes, etc. And if you really do all the math, it's really hard to make any money.
Yeah.
Really hard.
I think if there's a car that has legs, it might be the 300 SL. I mean, it's a very...
That's 55 years old, dude.
Yeah, I know, but it's
been newer.
But it is. Oh, I see. She wanted to know new cars?
Something newer, I think. If I think that was the prediction,
okay.
I don't know if there's... Oh, there's the silver in the back. Oh,
I think Porsches probably have... You know, they have an appeal. You probably like Porsches.
I've learned to. For a while, I did not like them because everyone liked them too much.
Yeah.
And then I drove more
Porsche,
of them.
And
like,
they
all right,
softened
these are very
a
good.
Little bit. But I think
yes,
they make
true.
A lot of them so you can buy them right.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy them. They're affordable.
Porsches are like Rolex. Everyone thinks they're amazing. And then once they see some other stuff, they go, they're overrated. And then they drive all the other stuff or wear all the other watches. And they go, you know what? There was something to that.
That's right.
And then they circle back.
Yeah.
That's how
it
works.
Yeah.
They've also had, I don't know if it's the longest history of like successful motorsport kind of endeavors, but it seems like they're one of the most consistent companies with just every year racing in multiple classes. And I think that just gives them a lot of cachet. And I know they use it to market their cars, but it also makes their story more interesting, and you kind of are more interested in their cars. There's no big gap like... I don't know. Corvettes probably did race, but it wasn't as famous a race.
Well, Mercedes had a gap,
right?
Aston Martin had a gap.
Yeah,
you know, other sports cars.
Yeah, and I think Aston Martins are so beautiful. The new ones, oh my God, they're beautiful.
You see, you probably didn't see it because you pulled up from the other side, but I've got the new DBS Superleggera outside, 750 horsepower.
Is that not gorgeous?
It is delightful.
Yeah, and deluxe.
Fantastic.
And delicious.
It is real good.
Yeah, really good.
What else we got, Zach? Anything else from the fans? And then we can let...
This is a Bruce Peterson question. Since you're targeting a younger demo with a relevant movie car collection, will you be inviting some video game icons like the Suzuki Escuda Pikes Peak car? You know, things that were in like Gran Turismo or Pikes Peak Hill Climb cars.
To the Peterson?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that one of the things we have there now is that Volkswagen, you know, that set the record up.
The IDR, right? Isn't
yeah.
that called, it's called IDR?
Yep,
IDR?
It's the electric thing that's
crazy.
Just like... yes, we are very cognizant of the younger demographic, and that is what's the important thing. It's not... This museum is not just for a bunch of 60, 70, and 80-year-olds to relive their youth. So we want young people. We want you, Matt.
I'm
yeah, no, it's definitely. I'll pull the page back up. But you guys have, you have like some crazy electric bikes there. You have the movie cars, I think, that really get kids stoked on stuff. You got older stuff, newer stuff. Like it's a really good mix.
We did a nice bike. Did you see our custom bike display?
Yeah, up at the top.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy.
Oh my
I don't want to ride a single one of those, but
no,
I like
don't
looking
either,
at them.
But they're just great looking.
There's some that's like, that's a motorcycle? That
yeah,
works? Like,
that's
what?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Do you collect any bikes as well?
I do.
Just the ones you used to race?
English
or?
Bikes for the most part. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And I have a few Harley race bikes.
Is there anything that special about a Vincent? Is a Vincent something that's
so
worth having?
Vincent Black Shadow. Yeah. I have that, and I used to ride it around. It's just that it was a cool thing in the 40s and 50s.
It was the fastest of the time,
yeah,
right?
1,000 cc's. It went 150 miles an hour. I mean, you know, that was a like a super bike.
What is something like that like to ride?
It's actually much nicer than you would imagine.
Really?
It's fast. I mean, it's not like, you know, super crazy fast, but it's fast enough.
Yeah. Is that, I mean, motorcycles are interesting because you can have so many of them, you know, compared to cars, and it's easy to go down the rabbit hole. But
that's right.
Does that drive you the way that the cars do, or is it not really
that much?
I
stopped riding bikes now, and I stopped, when I turned 75. First of all, if you fall down on a bike, you don't brush it off when you're that age. You break something. And it takes a long time to heal.
Yeah.
But I love motorcycles. And I grew up on motorcycles. And I raced motorcycles. And but they're so damn dangerous. I mean, you can die on a motorcycle so easy. And people are diverted. They're driving. They're holding their cell phones. They don't see you.
I ride a scooter around L.A., a little Yamaha 125.
You be careful. You can get hit.
I know. I wear gear.
Yeah.
Look, it's a measured risk. It's risky. I know. But
it's so much fun.
You have to accept that they're not paying attention, and so you got to pay extra attention, and it's kind of
And that makes
it
you a better car driver. I mean, you're looking at everybody's eyes. You're looking, when you're driving a car, if you've been a motorcycle rider, you're looking, is that guy going to pull out in front of me? Is this going to happen? Is somebody going to stop? Where do I ditch if this person hits the brakes, you know? So it makes you a better driver.
And actually, I learned so much about front-rear weight transfer from riding motorcycles that I was able to almost immediately bring over to cars and really improve my driving.
It's so important.
Yeah. Weight transfer is like
everything.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Anything else for Bruce from Zach? I saw there was one that said, how does a normal everyday schmuck like me get into the storage vault at the Peterson? You buy a ticket for a tour.
Yeah.
You can do that. That's
and
a
it's
thing.
Great. And it's really great.
Oh, awesome
our vault tours are 90 minutes and they seem like 9.
Yeah.
And we have 250 cars down there. Epic cars.
There's not wild just, stuff down there.
It's fabulous. That's one of the best, wonderful entertainment things in LA.
Yeah. Because there's stuff that really should. It's not like it's like the cast offs from upstairs.
Oh,
it's like,
far from it.
It's actually like if you're a car nerd, like if you're listening to this show, you'll like upstairs, but you'll love downstairs.
That's
like,
exactly right.
The real nerds really want to go downstairs.
That's exactly
and you can.
Right.
I think it's with 20 bucks, 25 bucks or something.
Yeah, 25 bucks, something like that.
It's great. I love
Very
the Peterson
cool.
so much. And my
Very
favorite cool. thing at the Peterson right now is the Back to the Future A DeLorean. Which
Isn't
is
that fun? Part of the
oh my god, I love
the Hollywood dreaming.
You know, for me, Back to the Future was such an important movie, and the fact that the A car is there and it was restored by those folks who did it, and they did such an amazing job, and it's got a real vibe to that car.
That exhibit really is working.
Yeah,
all the cars in there are the real cars. They're mm-hmm. not tribute cars or made up things. We air freighted the cars from Mad Max there.
Oh, cool!
The ones
there's a couple of hot rods there.
Oh yeah. And the ones from Star Wars.
The Land Speeders,
Clockwork Orange. All those cars.
There's
a
Demolition Man police car.
Yeah.
When I saw the Demolition Man police car, I was very excited because we are almost living in Demolition Man right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, no, there's such cool shit at this place. I love the Peterson so much.
Well, keep coming, and I want all your listeners to come.
Yeah, the 26th, Sunday the 26th.
Yeah, January the 26th is going to be fun. We'll be there. We have a great panel.
10 to 2.
It'll be 10 to noon.
Oh, wait, no, sorry.
No,
8 to 11 for the cars cruise-in.
8 to 10 for the cruise-in, I think.
Yes.
And then 10 to 12 for the panel.
I'll come to that. I can be there.
It's going to be fun.
Can I bring a car that's not American?
You can, but you can't park it with the American cars.
Wah, wah. All right, I'll fine. I think I actually may have the new Saline Black Label Mustang to bring down for that.
That would work.
I just drove the Saline S1, their new sports car, at Thermal. I have a video coming out.
What'd you think?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Like a Lotus Evora or a Cayman GT4?
Yeah.
More power. It's fast. It's good.
Steve is like the Phoenix.
Keeps rising.
He just keeps doing it. You know, comes from the... From like nowhere to back and back to nowhere.
I love his Mustangs from the 80s.
Yeah.
A Saline Mustang from the 80s is just about as cool as it gets, man.
Yeah.
They're rad.
I agree. I was actually on his board.
Were you?
So they
back
gave,
then?
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't in the 80s. It was, I want to say it was probably in the early 2000s.
So when they were doing S7?
When they had, when they were doing the S7, they had an Extreme Mustang.
Right. S281 Extreme, yes.
And so that's what I drove.
How'd you like it?
Killer. Halls.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You know what it's about? It's about those basket weave headrests.
I don't know really what it is, but they have so many. At any point you put your foot into it and the tires just go nuts.
Yeah. They're cool. And the new sports car is very interesting, I think.
Yeah.
I think they'll do success. They will do well with it if they can, you know, deliver what they promised.
I hope he does.
Yeah, it was cool. That's it. Anything else you want to plug before we get out of here? Go to the Peterson Museum, everybody.
Yeah, just enjoy the hobby, and I hope to see you guys on the road. And as I sign off, my letters never lift. You know what never lift means?
Yeah. I know the origins, and I know in general what it means.
Good, because most people say, what, did you hurt your back? I said, no, never take your foot off the gas.
Yeah. And Winning Numbers is a book about Bruce's car collection, and it's available at the bookstore at the Peterson.
Here, Zach, you got better eyes. Read about this.
What does that say?
Never lift.
This says never lift. It says to keep one's foot firmly planted on the accelerator pedal with complete disregard to the possible outcome can often end with catastrophic results, but with proper execution has been known to create legends.
That's very good. Is this the price tag for shit at the Peterson? That's what this is? That's perfect.
Cool.
Buy the book on Bruce's cars. They're awesome. And go see them at the Peterson and the cruise in the 26th, 8 to 10 a.m. Bruce Meyer, everybody. Thank you very much
for coming in, sir.
It's been a pleasure.
Best.
The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally, something to say. Good afternoon, everybody.